Hi Razor community, and thanks for joining us for another episode of the Razor Sharp Show, where we all hang out to stay sharp. We are your hosts, Ray Milodoni and Matt Romania. Matt, can you share why our podcast exists?
Our podcast exists to educate, inspire, and motivate you to help you reach your goals and make a positive impact in the world.
That's right. And we just love making our podcast every week and want to thank you, our listeners, for all the ongoing support you have shown. If this is your first time listening, well, welcome to the Razor community.
So if you want to move the needle forward and get closer to your goals, stick around as you're going to enjoy this.
You're hanging out with Razor Ray and Matt. Welcome to the studio, Matt.
Hey, everyone. How are you, Ray?
I'm doing great. Ready to sharpen some saws?
Oh, always. Let's do it.
Excellent, excellent. So, we've been chatting amongst ourselves, haven't we, Matt, about the fact that we do a show that's all about business and entrepreneurship, and that maybe some of the Razor community doesn't know some of our own business and startup experience.
Yeah, that's it. So, I thought we would take the opportunity to share some moments from when we both started our, you know, first business venture. We'll share some things that didn't go quite to plan and some learnings for anyone who's looking to set up their new business, or maybe you've got a business running, this, you know, might be useful for you as well. And we'll also throw in some things that did actually work when we started, you know, getting into business as well, just for good measure.
Love that, love that. And I love how you say things go to plan. I'm like, I don't know when things ever go to plan.
Yeah, good point.
You know, everyone says you need to have a plan, but expect for it not to go to plan. And I think that's a good tip. But, you know, it's good to have a bit of a framework and where things are going to go. Mm. But a lot of times things don't go to plan when it's in business because there are so many things that can happen.
Mm, for sure.
So, I guess I'll kind of... How many businesses have you kind of dabbled in?
Look, there's been the three or four little ones from, you know, guitar lessons to selling secondhand books. But the main one that got me into the business world really, like properly, I guess, was, you know, being a marketing consultant for local small business owners. So, that was my main introduction. You know, you set up the business name, you get everything all set up. So, you know, you're doing everything properly and everything sounds, you know, amazing and it's all very exciting. And then it's quite a steep learning curve from that point once you get out there trying to get clients, delivering work and you know, working in and around all the business stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Has your business has always been very systemized and process-driven, or a little bit more of a throw things together and see what works?
Yeah, in the beginning, absolutely throw things, you know, together to see what works and try different things almost on a daily basis. And that's probably one of the things that kind of got me into trouble, or, you know, I wasn't as productive as I wanted to be, is that I was just trialing and testing things too often to find that perfect tool or that, you know, perfect framework for a particular situation, where I really should have picked one and then, you know, gone with it and, you know, tightened the screws and from that point. But, you know, there was no framework at the start per se, but as a result of that first probably 1 or 2 months, now I'm all about frameworks. As you know, if you've listened to a deep dive edition, anyone out there, I'm all about, so is there a framework for that? So, I learned pretty quickly that it's important to have a structure, but at the same time, you need to leave room to test and try new things.
Love that, love it. And what's something that you really, like, just regret doing, or, like, you know, something just where something went completely wrong or shit hit the fan? What's that story?
Completely wrong. I don't know if I've got something that went totally wrong. Yeah. I did probably use too much of my first kind of lot of revenue on ridiculous, needless things.
Yeah, like a new car. Yeah,
not quite a new car. It was business, you know, a bit more business related. But when I started getting revenue in the door, I thought to myself, well, I need to get a bit more serious. I need a polo shirt with my logo on it. that's you know, I need to check that box. I need to get there. I need some business cards. I need some car stickers. And what else was there? There was a couple other things. Oh, a huge banner, just in case I did any markets. And, you know, and I got all that delivered, you know, spent way too much money on that kind of thing. And I've still got, like, random banners in, you know, my cupboard and every so often, I'll find a drawer that has like these old business cards that I never handed out because I had some weird information on it. Oh, and brochures was another one. I spent too long just crafting these brochures. So, I had brochures, business cards. I was in my polo, you know, rocking up to a client. I'm like, check me out. I've got my polo. Here are some flyers. Take a business card. And you
take 10.
Take a box. And some of them actually would take the flyers from me and say, oh, I'm happy to leave them on my counter, which was super nice of them.
That's good.
But really, to the extent that I was trying to create all that marketing collateral, you probably should have been spending that time on my clients or on my business itself. So, the processes and systems set up in the business. I got a bit too carried away when that money was coming in the door that I needed to look the part as well.
Yeah. And I think that might- I love that. And was it with Vistaprint?
Oh, I didn't want to give them a shout out, but sure was.
Come on, did you get the free did you get the upgrade of the business card holder?
Ray, I have at least 4 business card holders probably still haunting me to this day. I got that one, definitely. Well, you know, it's part of the shopping experience. So, add a holder on for another $7.50 or whatever it was. Why not? And never used them. And, yeah, but I've- Oh, T-shirts was another one.
Wow, you went all out. I love that. I love it so much because I've been there, and I'm sure a lot of the Razor community and other entrepreneurs will be in the same boat, you know, where they get the money. And you're right, you know, instead of making more money or reinvesting that into the business, we go and do all these flashy things, and it's almost like wasting money or spending money. And look, don't get me wrong, it's good to be on brand and have all your business cards and you know, coming from a marketing background, I think that's really important. But I think the lesson is that there's a right time for that.
Oh, yes.
And you can grow into that maturity state. You don't have to, you know, fake it from day one that you've got polo shirts. Well, you still have it?
I still- actually, maybe not. I've got the T-shirts at least, but I'll have to dig around for the polo. But it's like it was needless because I already had- at this stage, 5, you know, or 6 clients, and they knew me. I've, you know, went to meetings and that kind of thing without a polo shirt. They kind of bought into my business already. But, you know, I just thought that the next meeting, I'll just definitely have to, you know, raise the bar a little bit higher for some reason. So, look, I think there's a photo somewhere with me in the polo shirt. I don't know if I'd be able to track it down. Maybe for the Razor community, I'm willing to do that. I'll have to find the keys for that safe, but- yeah, it might be a good laugh for people out there.
Love that. That's fantastic. I know I've gone to- done shows and stuff where, you know, you get the banners and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember spending hours and hours getting everything right. And, yeah, it's lots of fun. And I think it's a trap that we all kind of fall into because it's exciting when you have your first business and lots of, you know, things can kind of come up and you're like, oh, I want a poster and I want a banner and I want to- You know, I've still got bloody pull-up banners and X-frame banners from so many business ventures ago just sitting there collecting dust. You know, for one day that I might order another X-frame, you know, banner and I'll be like, I've already got the hardware. I don't need to, you know, buy the hardware again. You know?
And then the other thing I'll throw into the end of that is, for me personally, my first business, I had too many logo redesigns. I wasn't, 100% happy with the logo, so I kept changing it. Same with the website, or throw in a new WordPress theme, but it didn't make a difference to my business. You know, I mean, I could look at, you know, back at that and see that now, but at the point, it seemed vital that I needed to update the logo again, and I think I updated the logo 3 times in 1 year for no reason at all.
Rebranding.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, the clients during that period didn't even change. So, there was really no effect other than, oh, yeah, just ignore the logo change on the invoice. It's a little bit different again. Sorry about that.
Oh, God. Still same company, same team, same
thing. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, love that. Oh, gosh. And did you have a racking, stacking amount of domains collecting during this time?
We need to do a raw edition just on domains and possibly domain hoarding, because I still get notifications from domains I've forgotten about saying this is up for renewal. And yeah, there's just too many. And I think I might even be stealing your words, Ray, but you know, you really need to know that you'll be using them in kind of the next couple of months and what exactly you'll be using it for before you make that purchase, especially when it's, you know, midnight and you're like, that domain sounds awesome. That's going to go really well with this project or this side business. I'm, you know, going to buy it, and then you do nothing with it. Obviously,
except for pay for renewals.
Pay for renewals. And, you know, sometimes you want to hold onto that domain and that name for, you know, a longer term venture. But for the most part, you've got to be really careful when you rack up domains, because it might be $10 or however much it is, but they add up quite quickly.
Yeah, let's leave that for another night. I think we'll make a full raw of it. Maybe we can even, you know, peel the curtain and share some of the domains that we're holding.
Oh, yes.
On to.
Looking forward to that one.
Let's do that one. So, I guess for me...
Yes. Ray, please continue.
I don't know. I'm perfect now. I actually had to load up my Trello board, because I do have a Trello board with all my business ideas in it.
Mm.
And I've got a couple of the businesses that I have attempted. I think one of the biggest financial lessons for me when it came to business was when I set up the co-working space. It was called the Beehive.
Mm-hmm.
And we were pretty happy because we got the .net version of it, because the .com wasn't available. But, you know, which I... Yeah, back to domains. But one of the things that we did there, we're like, that's it. This is plan A. There is no plan B. It's going to work. We're going to make...
Yeah.
Heaps of money. Well, it wasn't even about money. It was about bringing community together. And, you know, we're going to be able to trade services with each other. And we'll, you know, bring this hub of entrepreneurs together and just, you know, change the world. And one of the things that we did there, and I'm still paying a price literally, was we leased a commercial printer. So, it was a 7-year lease. I don't know what the hell I was thinking, but I still have the paperwork on the desk next to me. Every month, I just tick off another month being, you know, paid. And we also leased the furniture that was going to go into the co-working space. So, not once, but twice, because, you know, we're like, this is it. This is going to work.
Mm.
There is no plan B. And obviously, it didn't kind of go to plan. As we said at the start, not everything goes to plan. And up until today, we're still paying about $500 a month on leasing equipment that sits in a shipping container collecting dust. So, that was a very pricey lesson. So, tip out there for any Razor community, unless you've been in business for a very long time and, you know, and this is similar to like yourself, like you're like, oh, we need a printer and we need this and we
yeah,
deserve,
exactly.
you know, good furniture and, you know, we need a launch on day one. Back then, I didn't know what lean startup meant, clearly, or an MVP.
Same here.
So, that was like my lesson and, yeah, every month we still get a reminder of this, but I think it's, you know, it's a great from a learning point of view, but the amount of money that we've, wasted, I guess, in this, it's been a very costly exercise. I say we because it was with a business partner and we now split the cost every month and we transfer half of, you know, about $250 a month into an account and, $500 worth of payments comes out every month for the, and, I think we've got still about 2.5 years lease on our printer and 1 year lease on our,
furniture.
And, yeah, it's, been a very painful exercise because it reminds you every month when the money comes out of your account, how much of a stupid decision that was.
Well, at least if that opportunity comes up again, you've got a very, very clear decision that perhaps a 7-year lease, you know, might not be, you know, the right thing for that particular time. But
Matt, the business was going to work.
Yeah, well, exactly. And you wanted to, you know, be real and, you know, look the part and that kind of thing. And, you know, I feel it. And I feel like now that we've, you know, been talking about a couple of things that we've really learned from, you know, spending some time, starting and, you know, managing a business, that we could potentially turn this in, you know, to a couple of raw episodes to go deeper into some other topics. I know I've got a few more that I want to share with Razor community and you probably have some more as well, right? Would you say?
Bucket loads. Full.
But before we do kind of like wrap up this raw edition, I thought it would be nice to throw in some positives, you know, things that went well within the first month of starting a business and just to, you know, for balance. So, I might throw to you and say, what's something that, you know, was a happy surprise or that something went really well during that, you know, initial startup stage?
I don't know if because I'm a bit more the whole patience and long journey. Mm. So, I might bend the rules a little bit because it is raw and I can do whatever.
Do what you want, yeah.
But with my first kind of business, I think that's the one that I have the best kind of experience with, because it actually went through like a bit of a merger with another company. And, you know, I think that's kind of, that's where I learned my lesson to always have the end in mind. You know, a lot of people talk about like have your exit clear or know your exit strategy. And I know it's a weird thing to kind of think about when you're first getting into business, but I think it's really important because the way that you set your company up or your business, it's really important to know what you are setting that up for. Like, is it for the long keeps? Is it for, you know, flipping? Is it for a quick sprint to then merge with another company? So, my first web design business I ran for a very long time, and because I started that when I was in my, you know, high school still, year 10, and I hustled that for a very, you know, good 6 years and built up a nice clientele base. But then I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, I want to change what I want to do now. And I've got all these clients. What do? I don't want to just leave them in the dark and say, oh, I'm shutting up shop. You need to go elsewhere. So, I decided to merge with a business owner, another business owner that I knew that had similar services. It was a digital agency. And so, we merged the two businesses together and, you know, launched a new brand. And that brand pretty much acquired all my clients. And that was kind of like my exit. But I just didn't know that that's the way the exit was going to happen. And so, why I share that is because, like, early on in my life, I realized that it's really important to know what the long game is going to be. If it's setting up for exiting or, you know, the way to sell a business, because lots of things can come up. And I know at the start, it can be a bit unsure and things can change. And luckily, we have this word called pivot these days.
Yeah,
just exactly. Change the direction. But yeah, I think that was kind of one of the stories that I was really happy about, because I can say that I didn't leave clients in the dark. I didn't shut the doors. I happily merged with another company and then slowly wound my way out. And I was still there for a lengthy handover period. And I just felt like I did everything really ethically and right by the clients, right by the company that took over all the work and the hosting and all that jazz. So, that was a bit of a, you know, good story, I guess, for me, because, you know, a lot of my other business ideas I've had to kind of like just shut down or, you know, move on. And I'm happy to share that in a couple of the other episodes that we do moving forward.
Yeah. And just on that note, do you have any advice for someone who's looking at a merger now?
Make sure that your values are really aligned, because I think that's one thing that really shines through when you're going through, like even possibly a partnership or a joint venture, but even from a merger is- if your clients are really used to your values, then you want to make sure that you pass them on to a company that has the same values. So, if it's all about customer service, you don't want to pass them on to a company that's just all about the bottom line and the profits, which, yes, profits are important, but the experience that customers are going to get, your clients, it's still a reflection of you. So, you know, if you just put them into bad hands and you don't look after their transition, then it's still going to look bad on your personal brand. And I, you know, never had a situation where anyone called me back and said, I need you back because things have just gone to disaster. Some of my other businesses and companies that I've worked for, that's been the case. But, you know, in this merger here, it was actually really, really smooth and I was happy with that. So, I think really understand the company that you're wanting to merge with values and their why and their vision.
Perfect. Love that. If you don't mind, Ray, I might share something that was a positive outcome from probably first few weeks in business.
Sure. Go ahead.
I try to think of the best one. No.
You've had the whole time
I know. To do this. pressure.
You threw this question on me with 1 second to answer.
Yeah, exactly. And I tried to give myself some more time to think about it, but-
I know what you're doing.
Yeah, I know. It's not your first rodeo. I think I'll go with this one because it's pretty like grassroots. It was when I was really, I can't remember exactly, but it was like 2 or 3 weeks into this business and I wanted to develop a bit of authority in the space and I also wanted to get, you know, my personal brand well known in the local community because I was, you know, consulting to local small businesses. So, I contacted the local newspaper and asked them if they were interested in doing an editorial on me and kind of what I was bringing to the table and why it's important for, you know, local small businesses to pay attention. And really, I thought they might say no and, you know, you've just got to buy ad space. But thankfully, they were interested. There was a journalist there who was interested in more so the social media and website side of things because that was all very new at the time. And so, they wrote this little article that was in the local paper about me. My photo was in there, just me chilling out on one of the journalists' computer. yeah, I know.
Staged.
Yeah, I know. Gave everyone the wrong impression that I use a Windows computer. and from that, I got a couple of leads and I was able to say from that point, oh, did you see me in the local paper and that kind of thing, which sounds a bit arrogant, but when you're competing with a few other local small business owners who have been in the game for a while, to have that little bit of old school authority really helped me in the early days. And it was something, I guess a takeaway here is always ask, because to be honest, I didn't think they would say yes. And they did. And it really helped my business. And that was only a few weeks in. So, for me, that was a big win, a big unexpected win.
One of the wins that I really... This is an accidental win, I think. It's when I look back on my business world and even when I've been employed first time. It's a win that has kind of accidentally happened. I never really thought about it at the time of why I was doing it and what benefits that would have. And it's quite interesting because you know how people say certain things will happen throughout your life that compound, and then one day you'll have that aha moment and you realize that's why you went through that journey or that's why you did what you did. And I'll let the suspense stop. What I'm talking about is getting into embracing video early. So the many businesses that I've set up from very, very, you know, long time ago, and I might actually pull up some of these videos and share them along with this episode just to see, you know, how bad I was and show everyone that, you know, it's good to get out there and do it early. But it was embracing video. Every business that I've ever operated, for some reason, I was naturally drawn to creating video. And for every business that I've worked for, I've just somehow fallen into the guy who's going to be on camera. And so it's been quite interesting. So I've done segments for like caravan in shows called What's Up Down Under for a caravan company I worked for. The digital agency that I worked for, WME, I did their promotional videos and their office tour videos. So I wasn't one, I actually did two for that company there. And for myself, I've, you know, done videos that talk about sustainability LED lighting. I've done videos about co-working spaces. And I think that's really been a good compounding journey to lead where we are today. And I didn't know that Facebook Live was going to be exploding the way it is. And I really feel like that has made me very comfortable with being on video these days and being able to just turn on the camera and, you know, even do these unscripted into these raw segments, because they're, you know, when you're doing video for TV and all that, a lot of it's like unscripted, or you have to do the same cut four or five times and you have to like, you know, remember what you said and how you said it and all that. So there was a lot of on the fly thinking. So I think, yeah, looking back, it's been a big win, and I'm just very grateful that I always put my hand up and put myself forward, and video seemed to always find me.
Yeah, and so you were definitely ahead of your time there, because that was back, you know, when internet speeds weren't, you know, too amazing. So you would never think of, you know, recording and uploading something in the same day almost. Like what got you thinking that, oh, there's a video opportunity, I need to jump on it in the first place? Can you take us back to that, you know, that first decision of, oh, yeah, video is a good idea?
Yeah, well, this was all for post-production. So, there wasn't that whole element of recording and it goes live really quickly. It was all, you know, for TV shows or for a company to come and edit them and then send it on a, you know, disc for you to watch. But we did upload a lot of them online, and I know some of them still out there to haunt me, and I will find them. But, you know, I think back then I didn't really know why I was doing video, but I kind of put my hand up because, you know, I always had this thought of, you know, act as if, and I always kind of, you know, wanted to run my own ship and be the, you know, owner of my own company. So I always felt very humble and excited that, you know, business owners were electing me to be the representative of their business. And in some regards, I was kind of like being, you know, more comfortable to be in front of the camera than what they were. And it was very, a good feeling to kind of know that I was doing something that they weren't even comfortable doing. And I was putting myself outside my comfort zone, which was something that they weren't willing to do themselves. So, yeah, I guess video kind of found me. I don't think I went looking for it. You know, it was always just one of those things, oh, Ray would do it. He's good and stuff. He knows what he's doing. And yeah, I'd be that guy that, you know, maybe it was me not learning how to say no, but I'm very grateful that I didn't say no, because I think it's definitely set me up being more comfortable these days.
And before we move on from, you know, that that win of utilizing video in the early stages and having that compounding effect. I'm going to put my deep dive hat on just for a second, just for this, you know, little segment of this Raw edition. I promise sure, I'll take man. It off. I'll take it off. But I just wanted to ask you, do you have any tips on, you know, being in front of the camera and just basic video tips that have also compounded over the journey and, you know, consistent themes that you've noticed that, you know, that have worked on video?
I think this comes even back to public speaking and so forth. I think you need to forget that there are other people there. It's just, I think it's a little bit of a mind thing. You need to kind of trick yourself that you're in a different situation. Mm. I've always found that the best conversations, and I always say this, like the best things on video come from heart and not from head. And I think this is why we've enjoyed doing the Raw episode and we've gotten such good feedback, because it is topics that come from our heart and not so much from our head and overthought out topics and there's no motive behind it. So, you know, one of the tips is just really know your stuff and be the expert, I guess, in your field and do videos that come from the heart. And I think sometimes it's just important to turn the camera on and start talking as if it wasn't even on, and you'll always get some really good segments in it. One thing that I did learn, and I can't remember right now who shared this with me. I can't remember. But basically, like, the guy was getting embarrassed looking at the camera. Yeah. I actually know who it is. It was Peter Reginald, the number one guest on the Razor Sharp show. He shared this tip where he put a picture of his family just above the camera. So he framed it that he was talking to his family, someone who was more comfortable than talking to the world on YouTube and so forth.
Love that. And we'll put a link in the show notes to Peter's episode as well, because that'd be interesting for people to go back and listen to the very first edition of the Razor Sharp show.
No, it's horrible. We were so bad. Well, I was so bad. Anyway, polishing, you know, sharpening the saw.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yep. So, Matt, what's a win that you can share with me and the Razor community?
Yeah, look, I had a bit of a think about it, and
you're not allowed to think for the deep dive.
For the Raw edition.
See, you always ask me the questions first, so you can pick next episode. You know,
It's not scripted, but it's, you know, strategic.
I don't like it.
Yeah, we'll have to flip it for the next one.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, throw me in the deep end. But yeah. So I have had a brief moment to think about it, and I can't go past getting like proof, like social proof early on. So every client I had, even in the early days, and I don't really know where it stemmed from, but I would always ask for a testimonial. That was just part of the process. And then I would be always asking for a referral as part of that testimonial ask as well. So most of the time I would get at least something written that I could put on the website and share through social media. Best case scenarios, I would get a video testimonial, which of course I could repurpose to text and audio plus referral as well. And, you know, so even though I was doing the digital marketing consultancy side of things, the word of mouth referrals still played a big role early on. And so that asking for a referral and getting the testimonials and using them has really helped me connect, you know, with more clients. And I can't exactly remember when, like, why I started doing that. But, yeah, it's, you know, something. And also, I like to kind of give it to them as a value add as well. Like, I'll link back to their website, give them a shout out on social media, and, you know, display their logo, and, you know, it's almost like a mini partnership as well. So that's something, testimonials, referrals, ask for them. That's something that really helped me early on.
Yeah, and I think it's really clever that you've been able to build just into that habit really early, because I know that I work with a lot of business owners, and that's one of the things that they struggle with all the time, is asking for that testimonial and that referral. So the fact that you've been able to ingrain that into your business world very early, and I know that even for the Razor Sharp show, you've practiced this as well, where we've gotten a couple of guest testimonials, and I've failed to even do that, but you just kind of do it naturally, you know, flows on with your emails and things like that. So I think that's a really good skill to kind of have ingrained into your flow. So, like, how do you ask? Like, do you just bluntly go out and say, hey, give me a referral? Or is there a bit of a strategy that you put? Is it all off the bat of a different email? How do you normally frame it?
Yeah, it depends. And I don't really have a certain process of, okay, once they say this, Once I invoice them, I'm going to, you know, ask them or something. I don't have a set time where I used to ask. It would normally be in a follow-up discussion, like a casual follow-up, maybe over coffee, just saying, you know, because you enjoyed this experience and we did these things, you know, it was very results-focused. We did X, Y, whatever. Would you mind doing a bit of a short kind of text that I can use for the website? And then, you know, throw on the benefits of, I'll link it back to your website so you get some more exposure and kind of really build it up to be a win-win. Because that's what I want it to be as well. I didn't want it to be just, you know, taking from everyone. I wanted to make sure that I always linked back as well and try to give them a bump up. So, it's just asking and it's just being honest about it. Just saying, this is what we did. I'd like to do this for more people.
Mm.
Can you help me do that with a testimonial and or referral? And then they'll say yes. Well, you know, in my case, I would say yes. And then I would say, oh, and by the way, do you know anyone else who would benefit from what we just did? Can you think of anyone else? And I don't think I had anyone that said no. Everyone could think of someone, whether that became, you know, a client relationship is a different story, you know, but there was still that referral there. So, you're still getting passed over to people with that trust element and, you know, you're already in the door. So, I think it's, yeah, just part of the conversation and, yeah, I never scripted it or, you know, made sure it was, you know, a certain step in the process. It kind of came out naturally after we had a good result. Like, I'm not going to sign a client and then 2 weeks later, no results, say, oh, would you mind, can I use your logo on my website or can I get a testimonial? Like, obviously, you have to wait until there's been some sort of positive result. And it's kind of that moment when it's part of another meeting or another catch up. Like, don't kind of call them and say, can I, you know, use a testimonial. It's part of something else. It's part of the bigger picture.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a very, very good tip and one that I need to practice more of. And I think that, you know, it can definitely help grow your business very quickly. And I think it also shows a bit of confidence. And I think a lot of people, when they're choosing to do business with people, they want to know that you're confident in what you're doing and you're wanting to help more people like them. So it's a very good play.
Mm. Should we move on to the fails? Have we had enough positive energy yet?
We should. And I'm going to ask you, what's your fail? So you have no thinking time.
I knew this would come back to bite me. Yeah. So, fails. I did mention last time that there's still a few in the bank. So, that's a good thing. You know, that it's always, there's always opportunities to learn and, you know, there's always mistakes to be made. I think it's James Shramko who said a mistake is an investment in experience or something along those lines. I haven't muddled that too much. That's bought me a little bit of thinking time.
I know what you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Look, I think in the early days, like first few months, I probably spent too much time doing the hands-on work and I didn't outsource early enough. Like, to give you an example, I'd be working, you know, hours to perfect, you know, a flyer when I could have outsourced that to a graphic designer who would be able to do it in, you know, probably 5 minutes where it would take me an hour. I can, you know, do certain graphic design stuff, but for me to spend the time working on it would have been better off finding more clients or working on something else. I just feel like I could have outsourced or at least explored the option of outsourcing a lot earlier. So, going out and saying, I do these things quite a bit. Their time sucks. They keep me chained to the computer when I could be out networking or going, you know, to this event or meeting more clients or going to that professional development workshop, whatever it might be. If there's something that's, you know, you always find yourself doing and it's not giving you joy, then at least explore the option of outsourcing because the amount of time that will save you will equal dollars. And, you know, back then I was like, well, I can't outsource because that'll cost money. But really, it cost me a heap load in time in those early days. So, you know, not outsourcing early enough would have to be a bit of a fail there.
Yeah, and I love that. There's two things that come to mind where, you know, people say money comes and goes. So, you know, be fluent with it. But time, once it's gone, it's gone.
Mm.
So, protect that more than what you do protect money. And I think that's, you know, really, really good thing. And the other thing that came into mind as well is that, you know, I work with teams often where there is always like, you know, team leadership and so forth. There's people who are a bit controlling and they want to do all the tasks themselves. Mm. And so I always, you know, go through this thought pattern where it's like, if you delegate 5 tasks and they come back 80% done, then you only need to spend 20% on each of those tasks to then add up your 400% as well. Yeah. So all of a sudden you can get 5 things completed with the same amount of time as what it will take you to only do one. Mm. So, you know, something's better than nothing type of thought pattern. And, and you know, nowadays we see a lot of this, you know, take imperfect action or, you know, all that type of jargon, I guess. But I think it's very, very true because time is very, very important. And, you know, I know there's been hours where I sit there building my own websites for a business that I'm setting up. And while that's good because, you know, it means that I can start up lean, but I've spent hours on brochures as well, getting things pixel perfect when, you know, people look at them and throw them in a show bag or never touch them ever again. And,
yeah, you know. And I think it is important to do that work, though. Like, you're not going to start a business and outsource everything. I think it's important to get your hands dirty and understand how everything works, especially, you know, obviously, you do have that web design background, so you know you're good at it and, you know, it's, you know, something that you enjoy as well.
Yeah.
So, I think it's important to, you know, still do those things. But I guess my main point is that take the time to explore what you could potentially outsource.
Yeah.
Like, just, you know, block away, like right now, get the diary out, block away maybe a morning, maybe a Friday morning, get yourself a nice coffee and just think about what things you do during the week that you could potentially outsource. Or maybe get out a little post-it and put it next to you. And then when something comes up and you think, oh, I do this way too often, or this is really frustrating, or I don't really know what I'm doing, and I, you know, I don't really want to learn about it either, write it down on a post-it note at the end of the week, have a look and see, you know, what you can do to make it work a bit better for you.
Yeah, love that, love that. And, you know, I'm a big believer of always knowing what work's going on before you delegate it either, because, you know, you need to make sure that people aren't taking you for a ride or saying that a task's going to take 5 days when you know that it should really only take one day. And, you know, you got to be in the trenches before you can start delegating what tasks and to who and what, you know, personality needs to do it for you as well.
Yeah, and you can, you know, appreciate that person's work a bit more and be, I guess, a bit more empathetic when things go wrong because you've done it. You know what issues can arise or what barriers can be put up quite quickly, so you can, you know, be more understanding when things do go wrong if you've got that understanding.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah,
couldn't agree more with that.
Yeah, love that, love that. Well, I'll jump into some of my horror stories because this is a horror story.
Got the popcorn out. I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. I think I've only got 4 minutes left. Anyway. So, I guess one of my lessons of learning, or, you know, university of life, live and learn. I, you know, try and sugarcoat it as much as I can. But a friend of mine and I decided that we were going to build an app and we were going to be app-preneurs. It was a, you know, thing that needed to happen. Tick it off the bucket list. So we kind of rushed into this app. And this was the days before I knew about MVPs, and that's, you know, like minimum viable products. Mm. And I didn't go and take things to market and do, you know, feedback loops and, you know, follow any of the lean startups. So we decided to build an app, and the app was around saving money when it come to drinking coffee. And we spent hours on the artwork and getting the brand in, and we had the Facebook page, we had the website, and we had, you know, the Google PIN verified, and we had all these bells and whistles about business all set up. And we had the app under development, so we put the app out to, I think back then it was Odesk, which now is Upwork, and we had a company come back and say that they could build not one, but 2 apps, because we wanted to be native on iPhone and Android, because I was an iPhone user, my business partner was an Android, so we both needed to be able to have the app on our phones. So we went and got this, you know, job done for $500, which we then realized what they do is they trap you in by doing all like the storyboards, and they start building like a prototype of the app, and they get you so embedded and emotionally attached to it where you start getting excited that your app is actually finally coming to life. Mm. And then they say, actually, we've underquoted this job and it's actually going to be $5,000. And we're like, what? That's like, you know, from $500 to $5,000. But we were so invested in this now, and we had all the branding, we had all the storyboards, we knew exactly how the app flow was going to go. And we went, okay, well, if that's what it's going to be, let's pay the $5,000. And then we got to a certain another road, you know, bump in the road, and they're like, oh, it's another $3,000 or $2,500. So all up, the apps cost us $8,000. And this was even before we did any user testing or anything like that. Like, this was just so young and naive.
Wow.
And very costly lesson, you know. And so we had this app, and we started going to cafe owners, and we started showing them the business model. And then all these questions started coming up, like, what if this and what if that? And we're like, yeah, that's a really good point. Shit, we didn't even think about that. And so then we went back and we said, okay, well, we need to change this, this, and this. And they're like, sure, that's another $4,000. And we're like, what the hell? We cannot pay any more money. So we literally grabbed that app idea and put it in a bin and walked away. And, you know, every now and then that app idea revisits in my brain, and it was called Coffee Buddy, and I talk about it sometimes. Sponsor. Even. This show is brought to you by Coffee Buddy. Yeah. It doesn't exist, so don't go download it. Yeah. It's a fail story success. I've often thought about, like, doing it at one of those fuck-up nights or something, like, where I can just talk about my complete fuck-up. But, yeah, it was $8,000 all up, plus the time that we spent, you know, in an office, you know, co-working and so forth, and doing all the logos and the website and the Facebook and building up an audience. Mm. and then we realized that the entire business model was wrong. We, you know, we'll be the middleman person. We'll transact in money from the user to us, and then from us to the cafe. And that was, like, one of the biggest problems, is that people didn't know who we were, and they didn't know if we were going to pay them and all that. And we thought, geez, it's such a common thing. But we just didn't think of that, because we know that we're trustworthy and that we wouldn't do that to anyone. So a lot of cafe owners had that problem. And we threw it in the bin, and we kind of then pivoted a little bit, and we went to a website version. And I guess that's my biggest tip, or my biggest learning, that if you're ever going to build an app, build a web version of it, like a prototype or an MVP, and understand the flow. And then once that's working, because, you know, you can load a mobile website as long as it's responsive on your mobile, then you can take it to an app developer and say, build me a more native, better supported app for this website. And, you know, I think that's a much leaner, better way of doing it. And so that's my horror story and my $8,000 learning curve of, you know, not what to do in business, I guess. So share with the Razor community a story where you feel that you have maybe failed in business.
Okay, so we're talking early days again, probably within the first 6 months of setting up and starting my own consultancy business, and it is a marketing-focused one. But the fail in that initial piece is that I felt the need to be on, like, almost every single social media platform, and to set every single one up really nicely. So I even had the Pinterest account going,
nice.
YouTube, everything else. And I spent a lot of time getting to know these platforms, which, you know, came in handy back when, you know, I was telling clients why you should be on social media, instead of now it's kind of the how. And so I felt the need to try every platform, but also set myself up on every platform. So I was, you know, spread very thinly across probably 7 or 8 different platforms, and I really didn't, you know, get deep on any of them. I didn't really engage with the audience that much. You know, it was too hard and too time consuming to have a good content strategy for each one without posting the same thing on every single platform.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it had its advantages, but, you know, in retrospect, I really should have picked 2 or 3 and gone deep on those.
Yeah, I think that is a big trap that people fall into, is they go really wide. I know in a lot of my marketing consulting, I always say pick 2 that we, you know, work out that is where your ideal clients are hanging out, and really go deep with them and engaging and following up. It's such a big part of social media strategy, not just posting the same image across 7 different platforms. And I think these days a lot of people think that because there's a lot of social media management tools out there, that you can just let the tools do their thing, and, you know, you post it in one little tool and it goes across 8 different platforms. You know, I think people are getting overwhelmed with that type of marketing, and, you know, people communicate differently on Facebook than what they do on Instagram, and they're expecting different content and things like that.
Yeah, and, like, even now, you know, when Snapchat came out, I, you know, tested it, played around with it, understood it, and I've still got it, and every now and then I, you know, snap away, but, you know, for now, it's just not for me just yet. Yeah. I'm really focusing on all the 3, you know, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram for me, because I know that's kind of my limit. And, you know, I can have the time and space to explore good content strategies, engage with the audience properly and really make the most of it. But back then I was just, yeah, signing up for everything, which was just a bit too much. So I think even in the early days, if you kind of sign up for two or more, well, let's say two, like you said, Ray, and see how that goes for like 4 months or maybe a quarter, and then reassess if maybe you need to ditch one and replace it with a new one. But yeah, going kind of past the four mark, like people do it and people do it well. But for me, I found that starting in business, when you've got so many other competing priorities, to have more than three social platforms where you need to have different strategies, different things going on, it was just a bit too much. And, you know, because I was trying to do so much, there was no impact in any of them. So I may as well have just done nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. I think that's a really key point, is that, you know, when you try and serve everyone on everything, you're really nothing to no one. So, you know, I think that's a really good tip. I think that's a problem that I see. And, you know, everyone wants it for brand protection. Like, I need all my usernames on all the platforms, you know.
Yeah, and that's part of it. And Ray, I wanted to ask you as well, early on in your businesses, which social networks did, you know, were you leaning towards and why?
I think back in the day in my early businesses, social media wasn't really that part of my business plan. I think I was a little bit more in the e-commerce side of things. I was trying to get tools like syndicating through the web shop to the eBay store and, you know, things like that. But yeah. I think Facebook has always been there. Like, I think, you know, I still have like business pages of all the businesses that I've kind of run in the past. And, you know, so I think Facebook is definitely one that has always been there, you know, kind of get the business page. But I was always very big on, you know, spending too much time on the websites and getting the websites perfect before it even had one visitor on it.
Yeah. And before we go to your fail for today's part three edition, Ray, I just wanted to mention as well that, you know, these platforms are changing all the time and changing really quickly. So, you need to also be across all those changes. So, to have more than three or four, you know, it's not impossible, but definitely keep in mind that it's going to be a lot more time consuming and you do need to question the value you're getting from those extra platforms.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think these days where time is such a precious commodity, you really need to know where you're focusing your time is, and you need to scale up. You know, you needed to go, okay, I'm going to pick one, two, three, scale up slowly, you know, master one, then move on to the rest when it becomes a little bit more natural to manage. And, I think, you know, you spending too much time on your social media side of things, that kind of segues really nicely to what I was going to share, which is
perfect.
Spending too much time polishing a business and marketing plan. I remember the first business that I set up, you know, you Google all these tools on like what to do to start a business or you and all that. And they, you know, they all talk about having a, you know, clear business plan, you know, almost to the point that you could take it to the bank for lending and say, this is what my next 5 years of forecast looks like.
And,
you know, what, every, you know, your vision, your mission, and all these other buzzwords that kind of stand out when you think business plan and marketing plan. And I remember with one of the businesses I ran, I probably spent probably about 3 months really getting everything polished. I even purchased like a business plan development tool, that, you know, may have cost like maybe $97 or something. It was one of those, affiliate probably back, you know, affiliate linking type of things. And it was a business planning program. It would have all these nice templates. You could insert these nice graphs and charts and, you know, like it would have been great if I was going to seek capital or go to a bank or something. But I think back then it was just a way that I felt like I was working on my business, but not actually doing anything, not taking any action. And, you know, this is pre all the buzzwords of MVPs and, you know, lean startup. It was really, you know, back then, that's how people started businesses. But I see people these days also spending too much time on those type of things. So, that's why I wanted to share that, because I think, you know, we can learn from that to kind of say that, you know, don't even worry about like what the branding's going to be, the name and all that. Like, just start doing and it'll kind of eventually evolve. And your audience these days with so many easy to set up feedback loops are going to tell you what they actually want. So, yeah, I think spending too much time on the planning and then even that would lead into like what the website looks like and, you know, how the checkout flow goes and, you know, trying to hack scripts to be like a one-page checkout because that was kind of the new way of doing checkout systems and, you know, spending way too much time on that. And it's like, okay, well, we haven't even sold one product yet. And do people even want to buy it? But, you know, I was glad that I learned those lessons at, you know, 15, 16, 17 years old when I set up my, you know, web shops when I was younger. So that's, you know, lesson, university of life, I guess.
Yeah. And it's dangerous territory to get into is spending that, you know, so much time on business plans and marketing plans because, you know, if you're spending 6 months on them, then, you know, when you go to implement, well, you need another one because things have changed. You've got different competitors or the technology is different. Start again.
Yeah.
And, you know, I found that with marketing, like I'm all for having a marketing plan. I think it's really important, but none of this kind of 50-page, you know, 50-page document. It's got to be short and it's got to also include what happens when things go wrong or, you know, your time is shrunk. Like, what are you going to do to still roll this plan out? And so, even though I think marketing plans are important and same with business plans, they've got to just be simpler, more specific and, you know, allow for flexibility and, I mean, one thing that I see in marketing plans, and I'm sure this is the case in business plans, is that they're not connected to, there's no connection to dates or goals or anything. It's all very fluffy and nice. Yeah. So it's, you know, lovely for someone to read and say, this is a great idea, but really like connect it to your business calendar and actually put some dates on things.
Yeah. And I think there is an importance of it, but I think the right time and not spending too much time polishing. And like you said, you know, you don't need a 50-page glossy document to get your message across. And I'm really grateful that a lot of these new business processes like the Lean Startup, where you can literally do like a business canvas on one page that highlights all the top level information. You kind of look at it and visualize and go, is this going to work? Or is our, you know, customer maybe the wrong? Do we not go to B2C and maybe we're better off going B2B and setting up a reseller channel? You know, it starts creating those thinking patterns where when you spend a lot of time, you know, designing your ideal business, you're not actually designing your customer's ideal business. And everyone's so optimistic. Like, I don't think I've ever seen a business plan that is executed to the way that people thought their business was going to run before they launched. You know, and for something that's not, you know, life never goes to plan to some degree. Like, we can plan as much as we want and never is going to execute. It might get close and it's good to be ambitious, but I don't, you know, I think the point is don't spend 3 months doing it and pretend that that's you working on your own business because that's just, BSing yourself.
Well said, well said.
Love it, love it. And, the only other thing that I can kind of slightly add on there is to, you know, I did spend a lot of money fitting out one of my businesses when it was the co-working space. We got new carpet, new vinyl, repainted the walls, you know, got the windows cleaned and all that. And, you know, that kind of was just really wasteful money and it slowed us from launching, you know, again, spending too much time on, you know, as cosmetic things that people really didn't care. I walk into co-working spaces now and it's like trendy to have like spray painted walls and, you know, dying plants everywhere. It's like, you know, pallet furniture and
secondhand furniture. That's what you need now.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes, you know, don't spend too much on fit outs. I think that's another thing that I've learned early on in life too.
I love that. I love how we've kind of touched on both the online and offline worlds there with our fails. So
yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah. Excellent, excellent. And so, let's swing this to some more positiveness. What is some wins that you have achieved in your business?
Before we get into my wins, I know you've got something with you that we might have to bring out for this raw edition.
This is the interim, I don't know, intermediate break or, whatever you call it. Intermission.
That's it. The beauty of doing this unedited. Intermission. Yeah, we've got a brief positivity intermission brought to you by Ray's Positivity Button. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called the Think Positive Button.
Ah.
The Think Positive Button. And it just says random stuff, so I have no idea what it's about to say.
Drum roll.
I am invincible. I am a superstar.
Well, there we go.
Well, that's
positive
pretty good.
Affirmations are all round.
Invincible and superstar. Love it. Let's get into the wins.
Because, Invincible wasn't enough.
Yeah. I thought it was finished. I started moving away. I was like, oh, no, she wants to keep talking.
Yeah. Well, that's, I'm positive now. So, switching from fails to wins. Look, I'm a bit biased on this one, but in the early days, podcasts to me were like having business consultants in my ear.
Yeah.
When I was traveling or when I was, cleaning the house or whatever I was doing that wasn't directly working on my business, having a podcast in my ear, listening to some of these, amazing business owners and amazing marketers giving me that, inspiration and new tactics to try really opened my mind and possibilities to what my business could be and what I can actually do with it. And, illustrating the point that I'm in control of my own destiny and it's up to me to try different things and work out where I want to go. And so, discovering those possibilities and different ways of doing things through podcasting was a game changer for me and really gave me the love for podcasting that has developed, to me being flipped over to the other side of the fence where, we're helping bring that motivation, inspiration and education to others. So, the power of the podcast is a win for me in the early days of business.
Love that. And so, it's great now because you've got like the best of both worlds. Like, you've been the listener and you've also now been the creator. So, just to go a little bit deep, like, how do you find those two worlds? Like, do you feel like you create yourself just as much value by being the host as what you are listening to other people's podcasts?
It's interesting. Yeah. Look, I mean, I get a ton of value from both, from listening to other people's podcasts and interviewing guests. I guess I can be a bit more selfish when I'm interviewing someone. And now that when I listen to a podcast, I've kind of, become a bit of a snob where I'm like, oh, why didn't they ask this question? That's what I wanted to know. But
yeah,
I'm getting so much out of both. And I mean, they really complement each other because there's so many great podcasters doing amazing things with the way they, interview guests and the type of questions they ask is, giving us inspiration. They really feed into each other. But I guess it's a fine balance as well, is that I don't want to be consuming too many podcasts and not working on our own. So, it's an interesting balance, but enjoying it.
Yeah, love it. And this positive win is brought to you by the Razor Sharp Show. The biased answers of Matt.
I know. Like, that's...
It's good. I think it's really good because I'll be honest, I was probably a late adopter to podcasting. Like, I think it's pretty much the last 12 months that I've really gotten into listening to podcasts. I've always been really big on audiobooks, but I did make the switch, and I feel like this year I'm going to get to the point where I'd only listen to podcasts. Like, I've actually, just purchased like my last batch of maybe audiobooks, and unless something really good comes up, I really find that podcasts are so much more of the now and they're relevant and they're talking about, timely topics where some audiobooks and things can get stuck in the past.
For sure.
Love it. Well, I guess for my wins, for me, it's been, I'm going to go a little bit offline now because I really believe that the offline side of business is what's really, excelled my profile and my personal branding and getting to know the right people. So, networking is probably something that I have to mark down as a really big win in my businesses. For some reason, I've always been able to go to networking events and, put on my, my hat to say I want to, meet new people, because it is something that a lot of people struggle with. Like, they can go to networking meetings and they just, keep to themselves, or they go with a friend and the only person they meet is the friend that they already know. I make a conscious effort to go to a lot of networking events alone because I think it's more easier to... It's actually uncomfortable being that person not talking to someone. So, you're more likely to get into a comfort zone, which is talking to someone that you don't know, which is a quite... reverse psychology type of thing. But networking definitely played a big part in getting to meet great people. Like, I still talk to people that I met 10 or 12 years ago at trade fairs and networking and meetups and so forth. But I think one of the things that I learned later on in the piece is that it's not just powerful going to networking, it's really powerful being the speaker at these events or being the actual host. And the reason why I say that is because, you know, the more that you can be on the stage, the more people are going to meet you without the effort of having to actually physically meet everyone one-on-one.
Yep,
so, you know, when you're the host and you're speaking on stage and there's 30 people in the room, 30 people get to meet you and get to know who you are and see you as that person of influence or authority or someone who knows their stuff, sharing your knowledge and so forth, as opposed to going to the meetup group or networking event and you meet 5 or 6 people out of the 30. And so, you really, you know, you're spending the same amount of time, but you're not getting the right amount of bang for buck, I guess. So, as I always say, it's always good to do a good return on effort. And if you're going to spend the 3 hours at a networking event, make sure that it's on stage and you really get to meet everyone. And, you know, everyone always wants to go and speak to the speaker and so forth. So, I really have to say that that played a big part, networking and speaking at the networking events, not just going to hand out business cards.
Yeah, that's it. And for someone who hasn't been to any networking events and the whole idea of it is still very daunting to walk into a room and not know anyone and, you know, have to build up the courage to go and introduce themselves and that kind of thing. Do you have any advice for that person?
I think the easiest thing to do when you're going to networking events is to go with no business cards. And it sounds a little bit weird, but I think it's one of those, I think if you go there with business cards, you're likely just to come across as that person that's just trying to sell something to someone. And we all know that we've gone to these meetup groups and, you know, there's that one person going around and saying, you buy my product, here's my business card. And they're just literally there to sell you something. And that doesn't come through as authentic. But just be, you know, like I said, go alone. I think that's a really good tip as well, because it's actually uncomfortable being that person who's not talking to anyone, so you're more likely to spark up a conversation, or other people will see that you're not interacting with others and go and speak to you. So I'm a big believer of instant connecting, so I don't do business cards anymore. I've stopped it a long time ago. I'd literally say if what we've just spoken about is really powerful and we need to connect, here's my phone, find you on Facebook, add yourself right now. You know, go to Messenger, find yourself. You can add people to Messenger now where you don't have to actually be friends with them. If it's LinkedIn, you know, just do it there and then. And I always make a conscious effort that by the time I get home, I've messaged them saying, hey, it was great chatting tonight. Look forward to working with you in the near future. Let's grab a coffee soon. I think that follow-up is really important. I actually did a podcast on another show where I spoke about networking and went a little bit deeper. So, I will get the links for that and pop it all in the show notes, because I think that goes a lot deeper in the power of networking.
Wonderful plug.
I just don't remember the name of it, damn it.
Yeah. that's a great win and some great advice about networking as well. And, you know, a lot of that, I guess, becoming that person on stage has to do with asking for it. And I know the power of the ask is something that's close to you. So, I want to throw that over to you and just ask you, how important is asking for stuff?
It is the most important thing. I think, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. And, you know, sometimes you just need to find the right time to ask. So, there's a different ask strategy. There's some people who are literally just like, you know, spam everyone and just ask the question. And that I don't really feel like is the right way. But I do know that a lot of doors have opened by me just kind of thinking of an idea and going, you know what, I really want to connect with this particular person, or I really want to, you know, go and spend a day in this person's office to get some experience and so forth. And, you know, I would always make a conscious effort to kind of go, okay, well, in the next 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I want to ask this question. And I make sure that I get to know the person. I like some of their posts on Facebook. I comment on stuff. I, you know, build a genuine relationship, because there's someone who I want to spend more time with. You know, this goes back that, you know, you are the average of the 5 people you kind of hang around with. And if I can get on someone's radar and no pun intended, and you know, spend more time with them, then I'll love to do that. And I think, you know, by running meetup groups and by running the podcast, it's definitely enabled me to ask a lot more confidently, because now it can be like with a leading, like, hey, you know, really love what you're sharing on Facebook, and I'd love to have you on stage speaking at a meetup group, or I'd love to have you come on the show. And you just ask the question and people are like, sure, no problems, you know. Even before launching the podcast, like, I just had to go and ask a whole heap of people, do you want to be on a podcast? I don't know what it's going to be like, what it looks like, because I haven't launched it yet. And, you know, we launched with probably, what, 10 shows or 8 shows recorded and ready to go before we'd even published the first episode. So, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. And, yeah, I think that's a really big, powerful thing that people just don't do enough of.
Mm, absolutely. So, Razor community, I hope you've enjoyed this 3-part series, you know, a little bit of a look into our personal business fails and wins. I hope we got the balance right, but, you know, if you've got any questions, please let us know. But for now, we'll leave the wins and fails and move on to another theme for the next few Raw editions. Ray, do you want to talk about that?
Okay. I just want to leave the Razor community thinking about this as well, is that don't dismiss the importance of a failure in business. Too many people get caught up that when they fail, they've not succeeded. And I think that failure is, you know, that continuous way of learning new things. And the importance is that when something does go south, that you have the ability to kind of bounce up and get yourself moving forward again. And so, you know, that's why I was very comfortable to talk about failures and wins, because, you know, I don't want to sugarcoat that business is all amazing. And this is what's unfortunate about social media, is that everyone's always sharing their wins. You know, no one shares the fact that they've had to, you know, maybe let someone go today, or they've lost a big client, but they're always going to brag when they win a big client. And that really pisses me off, to be quite frank. So I think it's important that we do talk about the failures that happen in life and in business, and they do really thicken our skins. And I'm really grateful for the journey that I've been through and the failures that I've gone through, because they've really gotten me to the point of where I am today.
The Razor Sharp Show is brought to you by Podcast Launch Co. Podcasting tips, tools, and coaching. Visit www.podcastlaunch.co.